Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvachim Daf Kuf Yud Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn to the upper part of Daf Kuf Yud Ches, you will notice there is a crown shape that follows a two dots. It says Omar Mar. This marking was explained already at the bottom of Kuf Yud Zayin Mabez. These represent quotes from a Tanaic source that began on Kuf Yud Zayin Omed Aleph. So here, the Gemara is making reference to Shitas Rabbi Shimon that was found over there. Before we go further, we should take a look at our nosei, our topic heading, that you find in the outside margin. In our Shas Ozer Mark Gemaras, we attempt to offer topic headings as you go along. Each new topic gets a nosei heading, a topic heading. Here we've written in the outside margin, under the nosei, Hamokor Leshitas Rabbi Shimon, the source for Rabbi Shimon's opinion, Da Filut Tzibur, even the public, Lo Karvi Bebama Gedoylo, Elo Choyves Kavula Hemzman. They would offer only obligatory sacrifices whose time is fixed. For example, holiday-related type sacrifices that were of an obligatory nature. This is to the exclusion of public obligations that are not time, not calendar-related. Those, even though they may be obligatory, for example, what's something called a par helam dover shel tzibur, that's a sacrifice that's brought in the event that the Sanhedrin at the high court makes an erroneous legal ruling. That type of korban will not be brought at the boma gedola, at the central altar, at the time of heter bomos, at the time in history when private altars were allowed. Once again, at the time in history when private altars were allowed, there was a restriction or limitation on what could be brought even at the central altar. Needless to say that the private altars were quite limited in what could be brought there, as was discussed already in the previous sugyas. Now, turning to the Gemara, my time under Rabbi Shimon. What is the source for Rabbi Shimon that even the public is limited in what they can bring to the central altar? And we said only chovos hakavula hemzman, obligatory korbanos that have a fixed time. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, Vayasu bnei Yisrael es haPesach baGilgal. The pasuk in Sefer Yoshua says that the Jews offered a korban Pesach when they were in Gilgal. So the Gemara says that the pasuk at face value seems to be unnecessary. Pshita. It's obvious. Of course they have to do a Korban Pesach. Eloha komash molon. What the point of the pasuk is to inform us, the chovos ke'en pesachu de korav, obligatory sacrifices that are like the Pesach offering, which are time-bound, calendar, date-bound, those are what can be offered at the central public altar. Ha lav ke'en pesach lo korev. However, if they're not time bound, even though they may be of a public obligatory nature, they are not offered. They're not to be brought at the central altar, at the boma gedola, at this time in history when bomos ketanos were mutoros. This, in effect, excludes korbanos like the par helam dover shel tzibur or the seirei avodis kochavim. Ve'idach miboyale lichad Rabbi Yochanan. Those that disagree with Rabbi Shimon will require this pasuk of Vayasu bnei Yisrael as a pesach Gilgal for Rabbi Yochanan's teaching. Diom Rabbi Yochanan mishum Rabbi Beno. Rabbi Yochanan says in the name of Rabbi Beno, Orel mekabel hazor. Hazor is a reference to the purification process that someone who had been ritually impure by virtue of contact with the dead, what we call a tamei meis, in order to achieve purification from this state of impurity, he is exposed to the sprinkling of the mei pora aduma. This is done on the third and seventh day of his purification period. That's for a week after he had contact with a meis. He stays away from any type of tumas meis and is subjected to this sprinkling on the third and seventh day of that particular week. Let us say someone is uncircumcised. Even though he may be uncircumcised, that does not prevent him from achieving ritual purity through the Hazoah of the Pora Aduma. That, in fact, was the case of the Jewish people at the time they reached Gilgal. After all, they had not circumcised themselves during the 40 years in the Midbar. And when they reached Gilgal, this was the first chance they had to circumcise themselves, but they had reached the time when Pesach was going to be celebrated immediately. They entered Eretz Yisrael on the 10th of Nisan, and the Korban Pesach was offered on the 14th of Nisan. So they didn't have a full week in which to entire themselves. So we see from here, from that historical incident, that those people who were in a state of uncircumcision, nevertheless, they were able to purify themselves from the Tumas Meis on time. Toni Tano Kamei Dreb Ado Bar Avo. The Tano teaches, that means someone who is expert in Tanaic sources, taught over the following source in the presence of Rav Ado. Ein bein boma gedoilo le boma ketano elo pesach v'choivois hakavua lohen zman. There is no difference between a public central altar and the private altar, and we're talking, of course, at a time of heter bomos. Those were times in history when there was an allowance for personal altars. So this source says the difference between them is that on a boma ketana, a Pesach and Chovas Gevulem Zman would not be offered, but on the central altar, they would be offered. When the source makes reference to Chovos Hagvula Hemzman, what kind of sacrifice is being referred to? Amarle, Rav Ado, upon hearing this source, says, notice we've just skipped this parentheses section, so Amarle, Titarge Mas Nisoch, Rav Ado says, explain the source that you just taught, B'Oilas Chovo. That which it says in the source that Chovos Hagvula Hemzman are offered at the public altar, as opposed to the private altars. Private altars were used exclusively for voluntary type korbanos, things that a person took upon himself as in a vow, what we call a neder or nedava. Those are voluntary offerings. But the public altar, sacrifices that were of an obligatory nature could be brought, but which ones? Not everything. And that's what Rav Ado is pointing out now. The source that says that at the public altar, obligatory korbanos whose time is fixed, this is a reference to an oilas choiva. Why is that chosen? Because de'ika oilas nidova. This source, let's not forget, is contrasting the private altar with the public altar. That what's characteristic of the private altar is that only nidova, voluntary type korbanos can be brought. The public altar has, in addition to the possibility of bringing voluntary, also obligatory. So we're looking for those kind of sacrifices where this contrast applies, where namely that the same type of korban has at times an obligatory aspect to it, and at times a nedava aspect to it. So this is true if you're dealing with the ola korban. The ola korban is a kind of korban that at times is brought as an obligation. For example, during the holidays, part of the holiday korbanos were in fact ola offerings, and those were obligatory. An ola offering is also a type of sacrifice that can be brought on a voluntary basis. However, de'i chatos, this is stated in contrast to a korban chatos. Chatos nedova mi'ika. a voluntary sin offering, is there such a thing? No, there is no such a thing. Therefore, when this source features chovos gevurah mizman, as we mentioned before, the term chovos, obligatory sacrifices, is taught here in contrast to the same kind of korban that could be brought voluntarily. And that, of course, would be that would be appropriate for the private altar. But a korban chatas doesn't get into the game to begin with, because the korban chatas has only an obligatory nature to it. It's never brought on a voluntary basis. Therefore, the subject of this source could not include a korban chatas. And the outcome being that when we speak about that which can be brought at a public altar during the Zman of Heter Bomas, only an Olas Chova could be brought, but a Chatos could not be brought. The Gemara asks, V'lukma b'minchas Chova to iko chavitin. Why not say that this source is referring to the meal offering? The meal offering is a type of korban that has a voluntary aspect to it, that one can accept upon himself the in a vow, a neder or nedava, to bring a meal offering. And it also has a chova example, an obligatory example, and that's in the case of what's called the chavitin. This is the daily sacrifice that the Kohen Gadol brings, a daily meal offering known as the minchas chavitin. So why could that not have been taught by Rav Ada in explaining the source? Why could, according to Rav Ada, the source not be speaking about meal offerings? The Gemara answers, kosavar, because he is of the opinion, ein mincha b'boma, that a korban mincha is not brought, meal offerings are not brought on private altars at all. The Rashi points out at the bottom, it's three lines from the bottom, kosavar of Ada, the kosovar of Ado bar Avo ein mincha beboma. Why? The zvachim ksiv. The word zvachim appears in the Torah, or a variation of that word. Zvachim is a reference to something that's slaughtered with a knife. Ubeshalmei tzibor datzeres lekolukmo. Rashi points out that we can't say that this is referring to the shalmei tzibor of the Shavuos holiday. Mishum deshalmei bomektano lo domi lohu. So that the topic of the source is not a shlomim either, because the shlomim example of an obligatory shlomim is of a kotshe kotshim nature, high level sanctity nature, and the contrast case that's of a voluntary nature is a shlomim that's a kotshim kalim. So, after all said and done, this source that teaches that by abomak gedola you can bring obligatory sacrifices in contrast to the Boma Ketana. This includes sacrifices that are a like a Pesach or Chovos HaKavul HaMazman, other obligatory korbanos that have a fixed time. And after all is said and done, that's referring to a korban ola, an olas chova, and not a korban chatos, and not a korban mincha. And the Mishnah went on to say there, Velo Hoyo Shom Tikro, Elo Bayis Avonim. The Shiloh Mishkan was not a portable Mishkan like that which was used in the desert, in the Midbar, but rather it had walls built of stone. But the ceiling was not a fixed ceiling, but rather it was like the Mishkan in the Midbar that was made of fabric and materials. Those are Yerios Milamalon. The Gemara will spend time now focusing on the structure of the nature of the structure of the Mishkan and Shiloh. And the topic heading that we've assigned to this is that very point. You can see on the outside margin, Minayin, from where do we know? The Mishkan Shiloh Hoya Binyan Avonim Milamato Yerios Milamalo. From where do we know that the Mishkan structure was a wall made of stone and fabric as its roof? When we speak about fabric, we are also taking into consideration skins as well. Minohani mili. From where do we know that it was a binyan avonim from below, meaning the walls, and from above, fabric? we now have an answer. You'll notice to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara, a tuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. This represents a long answer. All of the lines of the Gemara opposite this vertical dashed line form the response. Amar b'chiyah bar Abba Amar b'yochanan. Kosev echad oimer vativiehu beis Hashem shiloi. One pasuk in describing Shiloh, it says, calls it a beis Hashem. That means it was Alma Bayesu. That would mean it's a constructed entity. Uksiv, constructed meaning a fixed entity, as is the case when using stones. Because of Echad Omer, Vayitosh Mishkan Shiloi Oihel Shikain Bo'odom. It's another pasuk that describes the Mishkan Shiloh as an ohel, a tent, something of a temporary, portable nature. Uksiv Vayimas Be'ohel Yosef Ubeshevet Ephraim Lo Bochar. Another pasuk referring to Shiloh and describing it as an ohel, as a portable structure, a temporary portable structure. So how do you resolve these two descriptions? On one hand, you see it described as a bias. On the other hand, you see it referred to as an ohel. Ha Ketzad. How do you resolve that? Answer, Lo hoysa sham tikra, elo avonim milamato, virios milamalon. It did not have a fixed roof, rather, it was a structure made of stones from below, naming the walls of stones, and sheets of material, virios milamalo, from above. It was taught that with regard to Shiloh, the area in which Kodshim Kalim, light level sacrifices, could be even the area, the boundaries in which the light level sacrifices could be eaten, this is what's called Bechol Horoya. Bechol Horoya, at any point from which you could see Shiloh. You could see the Mishkan. Mino Hani Mili. From where do we know that Kodshim Kalim are Bechol Horoya? Before we go further, we have a geometric form and also a topic heading in the outside margin. The topic heading with the structural note, the Nosei Mifne, you can see a triangle featured. These are Tshuvos La'Sheila, responses to the question, Mino Hani Mili de Bishilo Kodshim Necholim, or Kodshim Kalim Necholim Bechol Horoya. That light level sanctity sacrifices can be eaten at any point that from which you could see Shiloh. Omer Rav Hoshaya, turning to the Gemara, the Yom Akro, Hishomer Lecha Pen Ta'ale Oiloisecha Bechol Mokim Asher Tireh. The pasuk is warning against the offering up Ta'ale, the offering up of sacrifices. From any point from which you could see the Mishkan, and the Gemara infers, "Bechol mokom asher tireh I ato maale, aval ato oichel bechol mokom sha'ato royeh." The style of this Gemara is to infer from the restriction is focused on ta'ale, not to offer up on an altar from some distant point. However, as far as eating is concerned, you are able to eat the sacrifices from any point that you can see the Mishkan. The Gemara asks, "Amo, why not learn the pasuk as follows? Bechol mokom shato roye I ato maale, aval ato zoveach bechol mokom shato roye." Maybe what the pasuk is restricting and is not to offer up the pasuk is restricting the offering up from mokom she'atoroye, but it's allowing the slaughtering of sacrifices from a distant point that you can, from which you can see the Mishkan. So that instead of what we did before, we contrasted ta'aleh with ochel, why not contrast ma'aleh with soveyach? and that you can see with the markings where we've dashed underlined the ta'ale word, and with a horizontal dashed underline, and in contrast we used a diagonal dashed underline for the words ochel and zoveach. The Gemara answers why we don't say this suggestion. Omar Rabbi Yanai, Omar Kro, Shom Ta'ale V'Shom Ta'ase. The Pasuk makes a comparison between the offering up and other procedures. Included in the procedures of Ta'ase would be Zoveach. So just like Ta'ale is restricted to the Mishkan itself, so too the Asiyah, the slaughtering, will be restricted to the Mishkan, leaving room for what we said originally, that these are restricted. However, the eating is not restricted. Not restricted, of course, we mean that it has expanded boundaries to include any point from which you could see the Mishkan. Rav Avdimi Bar Chamo Omar, Omar Kro, he is a second opinion in this series of opinions regarding that there's a heter achila b'chol asher teroya. Omar Kro, he quotes the pasuk, V'olo hagvul mizrochi ta'anas shiloi. This pasuk is describing the boundaries. Rashi, though, points out that he doesn't feel that this is a formal pasuk. In Rashi, at the outside column of Rashi, says chipastiv, I sought out this pasuk, v'lo matzosiv b'mikra, and I didn't find it in the scriptures. Avol matzosiv, I found something else in Yoshua Perek Tezayin. But for our purposes, we want to focus on the expression ta'anas. Mokom shekol haroya oisoi misaneach olov v'al achilas kochim shaloi. It's a reference to one who bemoans. What the pasuk is referring to is in the situation that Shiloh was destroyed, if one reaches an area in which people used to eat the kochim, and that when he reaches an area that he used to eat korbanos, he will remind himself of the old days when the Mishkan was standing, and therefore he remembers the destruction that has since taken place. So the point for us is that where any point from which you could see Shiloh, that was a point at which you could have eaten the sacrificial meat. Rabbi Avo Omar, Rabbi Avo, another pshat in giving a source for B'chol HaRoya, Omar Kro Ben Poras Yosef Ben Poras Ale Ayin. When we speak about, when we make reference here to Yosef, we have to remember that Shiloh was in the portion of land, of the land of Israel, given to the tribe of Yosef. So this pasuk makes a reference to Ale Ayin. And we know about Yosef himself, his background included a trial or a test with regard to his piety in confronting the wife of Potiphar, in which he was able to overcome the inclination, the Yetzirah, that would have led him to an act of immorality. So that the Gemara describes, Ayin shelo rotzisa lazun v'lehenos midover shenu shelo, the eye that did not want to derive pleasure from that was not, namely the woman, Ashes Potiphar, was not his, it was someone else's wife, so he could not be with her, even though she attempted to seduce him. He overcame that which the eye ordinarily would desire, so the eye that did not yield to its desires, Tizke v'toichal kemoloi eineho, will merit having the right to eat in all that's within eye shot. And that's a reference to Shiloh, which was in the portion of Yosef. And we're saying that from any point that you can see Shiloh, you would be able to eat the sacrificial meat. With our markings, we attempted to draw a little bit of a parallel between the eye of Yosef and the eye shot of Shiloh. And you can see that with the dotted underline. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Hanina Omar, Uritzoin Shoichni Sne. This posuk of Uritzon Shochni Sneh is coming from the section in the Torah at the end of the Torah where Moshe Rabbeinu is blessing the different tribes, and in his blessing to the tribe of Yosef, he says this posuk, and we darshan Ayin Shelo Rotzisa Lehanos Midovar She'eno Shelo, the eye that did not want to benefit from that which was not his, like we said before, which, in the context of the Eishes Potiphar, where he overcame the inclination to follow his eye, will merit tizke will merit v'tochal bein hasnuim. The word sne that we had before, even though generally sne is translated as a bush, here it's a reference with a play on the words sne, like the word sonui, and even though the one is with a samach and the other is with a sin, those letters interchange, especially in view of the fact that they have the same sound. So it says that the eye that did not want to benefit from the forbidden will merit having the ability to eat bein hasnuim. Which Rashi explains a little bit further. If we look in the Rashi, in the outside column of Rashi commentary, Bein Hasnuim, Shiloh, Kadoshav, Ne'echolin, the sacrifices brought in Shiloh are eaten af Bigvulei Sha'ar Shvotim She'sanuhu, can be eaten at the borders of Yosef with the other tribes. Those other tribes are referenced to the brothers that originally had a feeling of hate toward him. So once again, you have the idea here that the korbonos of Shiloh are eaten at a distance from Shiloh itself. And you have a reference to, of course, the eye once again. Tana, Roye She'amru, when the Mishnah makes a reference to that it's eaten, B'chol HaRoye, Kol She'roye, the Ein Dover Mafsik. It's provided that you're at a place that you can see, and there is nothing blocking. Omar Le, Rabbi Shimon ben Eliyakim, Rabbi Lozer. Rabbi Shimon says to Rabbi Lozer, Asbara loch, I will explain this to you with a practical example. Kagon Bei Knishta Demoin, like this location, the Bei Knishta Demoin is the name of a location. From there, you can see Shiloh without anything blocking your view. Omar Rav Papa, Roye She'amru, the Roe that was said in the source, Lo Sheroya Kulo, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're able to see all of the Shiloh location. Elo Afilu Miktsasu, even if you see part of it. Boi Rav Popo, we have here numberings to listen, to indicate two questions that will be asked on this topic. Rav Popo, and following that will be Rav Yirmiyah's question. Let's say you're at a location that, while if you stand, you can see Shiloh, if you're seated, you are not able to see. Can you eat the sacrifices over there? Boy, Rabbi Yirmiyah, Oimeid al Sfas Anachal Veroya, Besoich Anachal V'eino Roe, Mai. Let's say you're at a Anachal is a type of ditch or valley, a depression. Let us say that you, if you're standing at the edge of this nahal, of this river, let's say you can see. However, if you're standing in the ditch, besocha nahal, you're standing within the ditch or in the valley, then the eno roe, mai, can you eat at a place like that? Can you eat betoch the nachal? Can you eat in that particular valley or in that ditch? Teku. So these questions remain unresolved. Ki osa rav dimi omar, b'shloisha mekoimu shorsa shchina. This sugya will mention that in three places there was a dwelling of the divine presence on the Jewish people, and in each one of the places you will find that the place was located in the tribe of Binyamin. So he says that b'shloisha mekoimu shorsa shchina al Yisrael. What are the three places? B'shiloi, the Noiv Givon. These are, even though technically they're two places, they're viewed as one. Hu Beis Olamim. The Beis Olamim is a reference to the Beis Hamikdash in Yerushalayim. So that the divine presence was found in Shiloh, Noiv Givon, and Yerushalayim. The Beis Hamikdash in Yerushalayim. U'bekulon lo shorsa l'becheleg Binyamin. All of these places are places that are found in the portion given to the tribe of Binyamin. Why was Binyamin meritorious in receiving this honor? Shenemar choifev avov kol hayom. That's the pasuk referring to that was stated in the context of Binyamin. Kol chafifos loyu elo bechelkoi shel Binyamin. From this we learn that all chafifos, hoverings, or in this case the settling of the divine presence, will be only in his chelek. So that if we just step back for a second, we can say, according to this Memra, according to this point of Rav Dimi, that Shiloh, Noiv Givon, and Yerushalayim were all in, Yerushalayim meaning the Beis Hamikdash and Yerushalayim, were all in the section belonging to Binyamin. Ki ozel Abaye omro kamei Rav Yosef. When Abaye left, he then reached Rav Yosef and said over this teaching to Rav Yosef. At this point in the Gemara, we have a trapezoid or volcano form that's whose position will flip over back and forth. This is to indicate a back and forth type structure. We want to keep track, so we call this a ma'akav. So if you look in the outside margin, you see the mivneh with the trapezoid form featured, and we've written in ma'akav, an attempt to keep track. So the narrow section pointing up are kushios al hanal. There'll be questions challenging the principle that was said, named the observation that all three places were in Binyamin. And with the narrow point, the cone of the volcano facing downwards, tshuvos, those will be answers or responses. So we start off with this series or this back and forth section. Omar, Rav Yosef said, after Abaye said over this point that these three places, the three locations, were in Chelek Binyamin, Omar Rav Yosef responded, said, Chad bro havilei lekailil velo miskan. Kailil, Rashi points out, was the name of the father of Abaye. So he is saying, Rav Yosef is saying that Kailil had one son, and that one son that he had was lacking perfection. He was lo miskan. He wasn't fixed. He wasn't in a state of repair. What's bothering Rav Yosef about Abaye's teaching? V'oksiv v'yitosh mishkan shilo. Uksiv v'yimas bo'il Yosef u'b'shevet Ephraim lo b'char. The psukim here are describing the abandonment or the destruction of Mishkan Shilo, and it mentions that it describes Mishkan Shilo as the tent of Yosef, and it, located in the section belonging to Ephraim, Ephraim being the son of Yosef. We see that Shiloh was in Chelek of Yosef and not in Binyamin. Omar Rav Ado, my kokashilei. Rav Ado interjects and says, "Well, what's so difficult? Why is this such a problem? Why is Rav Yosef so upset?" Dilma Shchina bechelek Binyamin v'Sanhedri gedoyla bechelek Yosef. Why not say that both psukim are accurate? There is an aspect of Shiloh that's in the chelek of Yosef, and an aspect of Shiloh is in the chelek Binyamin. Namely, the divine presence settled in the section belonging to Binyamin. The high court that had to be positioned next to the place of the the holy temple, if you will. In the case of Shiloh, that would be the equivalent. So the Sanhedrin had to be there as well. So though the divine presence of the Almighty was in the section of belonging to Binyamin, the Sanhedrin sat in the section belonging to Yosef, so that Shiloh was at a point at which both tribes had a representation land-wise. And it's pointed out in this very Gemara that was the situation in the case of the Beis HaMikdash and the Beis HaLomim, where the divine presence was in the chelek belonging to Binyamin, and the Sanhedrin sat in the chelek of the Beis HaMikdash belonging to Shevet Yehuda. So there's precedent for this. It's a sort of a backwards precedent because we're citing the Beis HaMikdash, which was later in history, but that's a known point. So let's use that known point to explain the two tribes in the case of Shiloh. Armale, so Rav Yosef says back, Hochi Hashta, how can you compare the case of the Beis HaLomim to the case of Shiloh? Hasam, in the case of the Beis HaLomim, Mikrovon Nachlos Gabi Adodi, the sections of inheritance of Yehuda and Binyamin were in fact close to one another. They were touching one another. They bordered on one another. Therefore, the ability for us to say that the divine presence was in Binyamin's portion and the Sanhedrin sat in Yehuda's portion is quite tenable. The two portions were right next to each other. But here in the case of Shiloh, who says that they were close to one another? Namely, that the mi mikrofon would be the section belonging to Yosef and the section belonging to Binyamin. They weren't close to one another. If we want to be more accurate, well, Shiloh, which we see is clearly part of the section of Yosef, that was not close to the border with Binyamin. The Gemara answers with a long answer that in fact there was an element of geographic closeness. Hocha Nami, in fact, over here with regard to Shiloh and the Chelik of Binyamin, Nami Mikrovon, they were close. Gemara Rav Chama Bar Chanina, just like Rabbi Chama said, Ritzua Hoisa Yosef Mechelkos Yehuda V'Nechneses Lechelkos Shel Binyamin. With regard to the Beis HaMikdash, Rav Chama teaches that there was a strip of land that that belonged to Shevet Yehuda that extended beyond the main part of Shevet Yehuda and entering the section belonging to Binyamin. Now, on that strip of land that encroached upon the section of Binyamin, Ubo Hoya Mizbeach Bonui, the Mizbeach, or maybe we could say part of the Mizbeach, was built on that very strip that belonged to Yehuda. For Binyamin HaTzadik Mitzter Lelevola. And Binyamin HaTzadik is reference to the original Binyamin, who the son of Yankov, who understood this prophetically. He was upset. He was Mitzter. He was upset and wanted to absorb it into his portion. In other words, he wanted all of the Beis HaMikdash for himself. Or, if we want to be more specific, he wanted all of the sacrificial elements of the Beis HaMikdash in himself. And he didn't want to have any part of the Mizbeach in Yehuda's section. So, what do we see from here? That we see that this concept of a Ritzua Hoysa Yoitzis, a strip of land went that extended from one shevet into the other. Hachanami, so too here with regard to Shiloh, Ritzua Hoysa Yosef, Mechelko Shel Yosef, Lechelko Shel Binyamin. The strip of land the portion that Shiloh was constructed was a piece of land that was actually a type of tongue that had extended from the section of Yosef into the section of Binyamin, so that even though the main part of the tribe of Yosef was at a distance, or let's say the main part of Shevet Binyamin was at a distance from the tribe of Yosef, at where Shiloh was, that's what we thought originally, but it turns out that there was a strip of land that extended from Yosef into the section granted to Binyamin, and on that strip of Yosef land was Shiloh. V'hainu d'chtiv ta'anas Shiloh. And with that we understand the expression. This was an expression that we saw at the top line of this Omid. You can see that with our arrows to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. We understand what the Kavon of this pasuk of Tanas Shiloh is, which is a reference to Binyamin complaining about his wanting to have all of Shiloh in his possession. When we see in the final analysis, according to the suggestion above, that maybe the Sanhedrin was in Yosef's section and the divine presence was in Binyamin's section. But nevertheless, Ta'anas is a lotion with mitonain, or complained over it. So regarding this, Binyamin was complaining that he didn't have it all for himself. Ketanoi, the issue is a machlokes tanoim. The issue that we just mentioned about the location of the divine presence. The pasuk says chofeifalov. This pasuk in the context of Binyamin, it says chofeifalov kol hayom uvein ksef of shachin, and this will now be broken up by the Tanaic source. Chofeifalov ze mikdash rishon, kol hayom ze mikdash sheni. That's a reference to the second base of Mikdash. Ubeng Seif of Shachin, and between his shoulders he will dwell. Elu Yemoi Samashiach. Rebbe Oimer. Chofif Olav Ze Ha'olam Hazeh. Namely, that wherever the Shekhinah was, including Shiloh, Nov, and Yivon. Kohayom. And we should mention that this is a reference to the Shevet Binyamin. Rashi points out in the outside margin, Ha'olam Hazeh Kol Mokom Shishor Sashchina V'Af Shiloh V'Nov Givon. And as we said, this is a pasuk referring to Shevet Binyamin. So Chofeif Olav Zeh Ha'olam Hazeh, all places that there was divine presence, it was in the Chelek of Binyamin, including Shiloh, Nov, and Givon. Kol Hayom, that part of the pasuk is Elu Yemoisa Mashiach. That's a reference to a future time, the time after Mashiach comes. Ubeng Seif of Shachin, Ze Ho'ilom Habo. That's a reference to the world to come. So from this source that we just read, we see that the Shita of Rebbe would conform to that which Rav Ada taught at the beginning of this section of Gemara. We should say more accurately that Rav Dimi taught. That all places that there was divine presence, it was in the chelik of Binyamin. Tana Rabbanan. Before we go further in the Gemara, we have a geometric form that will very shortly appear, a diamond, and this is explained in the outside margin under the Nosei Mivneh heading. So you see the diamond appears, and it features the word Yemei, and the sugya will deal with Kama Zman Omad HaMishkan. How long did the Mishkan stand in these different places? Bamidbar, Gilgal, Benoiv, V'Givoin. How long did it stand in these respective places? Cheshbon Tziruf Shanim Elu, the calculation made by adding up these years, the years that each place had, Yitain Mispar HaShanim Shamishkan Oma B'Shilo, will eventually give us the number of years that it stood in Shiloh, because there isn't a pasuk that says black on white how long the Mishkan stood in Shiloh. V'hainu 369. Yesh litzayin debayis rishon nivnasa 480 achar yitzias of time. We should point out that the Beis HaMikdash was built 480 years after their exodus from Egypt. This will make much more sense when we get into the Gemara. We will see in the course of the sugya the use of a double underline, and each point at which the double underline appears, this is a biur, a clarification. Biur mispar hashanim shamat ha mishkan bechol makom. Where the Gemara will analyze and investigate the number of years that the Mishkan stood in each place. So if you skim ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice Yemei Oil Moed, Sheba Midbar, the length of time that it was in the Midbar, in the desert. Then after that you see Sheba Gilgal, and after that you have Oil Moed, Sheba Noiva Givain. Turning to the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, Yemei Oil Moed, Sheba Midbar, Arboim, Shana Chosur Achas. The number of years that the Mishkan stood in the Midbar, that it was present in the Midbar, we'll say, because it was mobile, it was transient, it was 40 minus 1, meaning 39, hence you can see we've written 39 in. Yemei Oil Moed Sheba Gilgal, Arba Esrei. The number of years that the Mishkan stood in Gilgal was 14 years, Zayin Shekavshu v'Zayin Shechalku. Those 14 years are made of 7 and 7, 7 years of conquest and 7 years of dividing out the land amongst the different tribes. Yemei Oil Moed Shebenov Givon, the amount of time, sum total of Nov and Givon was Chamishim v'Sheva, 57. Nishtairu L'Shilo, there remains from this calculation, namely if you add up the numbers that we saw here, 39, 14, and 57, if you add up those numbers, you will get to a number of approximately, you'll see 111, and if you subtract 111 from 480, which is the total amount of time between the exodus from Mitzrayim to the Binyan Bayis Rishon, Nishtairu Nishilo Shlosh Meos Vishishim Chosrachas, you're left with 369, which in fact was the length of time that Shiloh stood. At this point you see the double underline. Each one of the points that was featured in a diamond will then be the subject of discussion in each section that the double underline appears. Yemei Oyel Moyed Shebamidbor Arboim Choser Achas. The number of years that the Mishkan was standing in the desert, standing, as we mentioned before, meant the entire period, including the movement from place to place, was a total of 39 years. Minolon, from where do we know that? The Omar Mor, it has been taught, Shona Rishona Oso Moshe Es HaMishkan. During the first year in the Midbar, Moshe was involved with the construction of the Mishkan. Shnia Hukam HaMishkan. The second year, the Mishkan was set up. V'sholach Moshe Miraglim. And that's the second year of the sojourn in the Midbar, the spies were sent to Eretz Canaan. Shebagilgal Arbo Asrei, it stood 14 years in Gilgal. Those 14 years were made up of Sheva Shekovshu v'Sheva Shechalku, 14 years of the conquest of land and 7 years of conquest, plus Sheva Shechalku, 7 years of the division. Minolon, from where do we know this? De Ka'omar Kolev. Kolev said, Kolev was one of the spies. He was sent by Moshe Rabbeinu to scout out the land. He said, Ben Arboim Shana Anochi Bishloach Moshe Eved Hashem Osi Mikodesh Barnea L'Ragel Es Haaretz V'Oshiv Oisoi Dovar Kashirim Levovi. He describes himself as being age 40 when he was sent on the spy mission. From that point, there remained 38 more years until their entrance into the land. So we can say that Kalev was 78 when the Jewish people entered Eretz Yisrael. Uksiv, there's another posuk that says, Ve'ata hine onochi hayoim ben chomesh u'shmoinim shana. This pasuk was said at the point of the division of the land of Israel, amongst the tribes. At the point of division, he says he was 85. Ki avre liyarden bar kamo have. When they crossed into the land, how old was he? Bar shivin vitamni. He was 78. V'komar ben chomesh u'shmoinim shana. And at the point of division, he says he was 85. So from 78 to 85, from the point of entrance to the point of division, harei sheva shekavshu, that represents the 7 years that they spent conquering the land. V'sheva shecholku min olan, from where do we know that there were 7 years for the division? Those additional 7 years then would account for our total of 14 years for the time in which the Mishkan was in Gilgal. Gilgal was the place in which the Mishkan was situated while the conquest and division took place. So how do I know there were 7 more years for the division? Two approaches. One, Ibo Yesema Midesheva Kovshu, Sheva Na Michoku. Rashi says this is a svara. This is simply a point of reasoning that since it took 7 years to divide, it most likely took another 7 years to. Let's say that again. Since it took 7 years to conquer the land, it must have taken another 7 years to divide the land. The Iboy Sema, another approach, Midelo Mishkachas Law, if you don't come to this conclusion that there were a total of 14 years for Gilgal, then the following calculation will not be able to be confirmed. And that is as follows. Barbo esrei shona achar asher hukso ha'ir. This is a pasuk that's stated much later. This follows the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The pasuk says that 14 years after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there was a Yovel year. In order for a Yovel year to be observed 14 years after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, it's necessary to say that the starting of the Yovel counting took place 14 years after they entered the land. So that if the Yovel clock, so to speak, starts 14 years after they entered the land, this would account for the 14 years during the conquest and division of the land, during which the Yovel was not celebrated. With that in mind, then, it will come out that 14 years after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, that would be another Yovel year. Therefore, if you accept this calculation that the conquest and division of land took 14 years, then, and Rashi works out the calculation, then it will come out that 14 years after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there was a Yovel year. But if you don't accept this premise that the Mishkan was in Gilgal for a total of 14 years, if you don't accept that, then you will find that the Yovel year won't turn out 14 years after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. In our current Hesber, we're not giving the details of that calculation because that is itself a rather lengthy process that is done by Rashi. Oyomoyid shebenoy v'givoyin chamishim v'sheva. The Oyomoyid, the Mishkan, stood in Nov and Givon for a total of 57 years. Minolon, from where do we know this? Before we go on with the Gemara's explanation, we have some accompanying information that will help in appreciating the sugya. So before we actually do the Gemara itself, let's take advantage of the timeline that you see at the bottom of the page. We've entitled this 57 Shonim Shel Nov Givon, the 57 years, an accounting of the 57 years of Nov and Givon. The chart, or the timeline, starts with the death of Eli the Kohen Gadol, who was the Kohen Gadol at the end of the Shiloh time period. Eli died upon the destruction of Shiloh, which began the next location, the Nov location, and it was the Mishkan was in Nov from the death of Eli till the death of Shmuel, which was 10 years later. From the point of the death of Shmuel, the Mishkan moved to Givon. We will notice on our timeline, between Shmuel and Shaul, there were 3 years. That, namely, if you bring that our starting point, the starting point of the Nov counting, relative to the starting point of Nov counting, Shmuel died 10 years after that, and Shaul, the king, died 13 years after that, after the Nov period began. And then from that point, from the 13-year mark, for another 7 years, David reigned as king in Chevron. That brings you to year 20 since the beginning of the Nov period. And from year 20 till year 53, 33 years, David was in Yerushalayim. So from the beginning of the Nov period till the end of David HaMelech, there transpired 53 years. At that point, Shlomo HaMelech arose to the monarchy, and 4 years into his monarchy, he finally built the Beis HaMikdash. It took 4 years from the beginning of his monarchy till the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So with all of these numbers tallied up, you get to a total of 57. If you break it down, it would comes out that Nov was 10 years and Givon 47. We might also point out that Eli died at the point that the Oron, the holy ark that contained the Luchos, was taken into captivity during a battle with the Plishtim. He was in captivity for 4 months. After that, it was returned to the Jewish people. We need that piece of information for the immediate piece of Gemara. So, turning back to the Gemara, we mentioned already when at the double underline, Oyel Moed Shebenoi V'Givon Chamishim V'Sheva Minolon. From where do we know that? Diftiv. It says with regard to the death of Eli HaKoyin, Vayhi Kaz Kiroi Es Aroin Ho'Elohim. When it was mentioned that the Oron Hashem was taken into captivity, Eli died. Vitona Keshemes Eli HaKoyin Chorvo Shiloi Uvo L'Noiv. When Eli died, Shiloh was destroyed, and the Mishkan reached Noiv. Keshemes Shmuel HaRamasi. When the prophet Shmuel died, Chorvo Noiv. Nov was destroyed. That was destroyed at the hands of Shaul. Nov was a city of Kohanim that Shaul murdered because they had offered refuge to David, his adversary. Ubo LeGivon. And they reached the Mishkan, then was relocated in Givon. Uksiv. Vayhi Miyoim Sheves Ha'oron Bekiryas Yorim. Vayirbu hayomim, vayu esrim shana, vayinohu kol beis Yisrael achrei Hashem. For 20 years, the Oron was in Kiryas Yorim. We pointed out earlier that the Oron had been taken into captivity and restored to the Jewish people 4 months later. At the point that the Oron was taken captive, Eli had died. And that we can see on our chart, that Mises Eli, from that point, from Mises Eli, there is an accounting of 20 years till which David was reigning in Hebron. This point will be featured now in the Gemara. Hani Esrim Shana, the pasuk that mentioned the captivity, the presence of the Orin in Kiryas Seorim for 20 years, how do we divide up that period of 20 years? And it's as follows. Esr Shana Shemolach Shmuel Biatzmo. 10 of those years, Shmuel reigned by himself. Namely, after the death of Eli, Shmuel reigned for 10 years by himself. Vishona Shemolach Shmuel Vishol. There was 1 year that they served together. In our earlier explanation, we stated a slight inaccuracy. We mentioned that 10 years after the Churban of Shiloh, Shmuel died. That's not accurate. It's rather 10 years after the Churban of Shiloh, Shmuel completed his ruling of the Jewish people by himself. Then, for another year, Shmuel and Shaul reigned together. Ushtayim Shemolach Shaul. And then, after reigning together with Shaul for a year, Shmuel died, and Shaul continued to reign for another 2 years. So Shaul was in a position of leadership for a total of 3 years. That brings you to the 13th year of this 20-year analysis. V'sheva did David, and 7 years of David's reign. The amount of time that David reigned over the Jews, Arboim Mem is Arboim Shana, 40 years total. Bechevron Molach Zayin Shanim, in Hebron he reigned for 7 years, 7 of those 40, leaving 33 years after Hebron. Now, in making this, in using this particular number, this year, this 40 year, as far as our calculation, we have to point out that we already accounted for 7 of those 40 years in our original calculation. So that if you use the timeline, you can see that the 7 years are accounted for from the time after Shaul till David completed his reign in Hebron. That got you to the 20-year mark. And then another 33 years from the Hebron point till the end of David HaMelech, that gets you to the 53-year mark. U'bishloimo iksiv, and regarding Shlomo HaMelech, David's successor, it says, Vayochel livnoisoi b'shnas arba l'malchuso. He started the building of the Beis Hamikdash in the 4th year of his realm. That shows you that there were a total of 57 years for the time of Nov and Givoin. Nishtairu l'shiloi, there remains from the number 480, which is a number we did not mention earlier, but it's now time to mention it. From the leaving of Egypt till the building of the Beis Hamikdash, there were 480 years. So if you take all the numbers we have already accounted for, and we've done this on the inside margin, you can see where there's a double star. We've taken the number 480. We've added up the numbers of Midbar, 40 years, 14 for Gilgal, and 57 for Nov and Givon, giving you a total of 111. So if you subtract 111 years from 480, that leaves you with the missing number of years in our calculations from the till the beginning of the Beis Hamikdash, leaving you with a balance of 369 years. That's what the Gemara says here. Nishtairu l'shiloh shlosh meos v'shivim choser achas. That's 369 years, which is the number of years that the original Tanaic source said that the Mishkan stood in Shiloh. With that, we complete our shiur for today.